With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of Game Week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hey, Hail Cheaters. Welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Josh, I'm doing great. We're in the middle of the big double game week 26. Quick story for you. Heading into the weekend, I think my wife could tell I was a little stressed out about the deadline. And she says, hey, you know, talk to me about the games that are happening this weekend. I'd be interested if you're interested. If there's a particular match that stands out, maybe I could sit and watch a match with you. Wow. And I thought, whoa, wait, is this the moment in which Leela becomes interested in football and fantasy?
Yeah.
And she's like, no, don't get me wrong. I don't actually want to watch the game. I just feel like you need some moral support right now. So I feel a lot of FPL managers can probably identify this is a stressful time being in the middle of a huge double game week. So what do we have planned for this episode, Josh, if we're just kind of in flux?
We are in the middle of the I don't think it's hyperbolic, right? Is this literally the largest double game week ever, the biggest one we've ever had?
I believe it is. I believe it is. Yeah. The history books could correct us, but I feel like it is.
So basically, it's all of these FA Cup quarterfinal matches that are taking place in what would be game week 29. So like 3 weeks from now. All of those matches, like 14 of them are going to be postponed because of FA Cup commitments. So as a result of that, they have basically pulled all of those matches into Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I guess that's right, right? Tomorrow is just a regularly scheduled Everton match that has not been played yet this week. So it's very, so it's very
wild. Run-of-the-mill Everton match.
Yeah, I've got two players in that, as do you, I believe. Yeah. So yeah, it's just a very strange match, and kind of stressful planning. I'm with you. I was up until, I couldn't sleep. I was working on it, and then I went back and forth, and then I had kind of a plan, and then Ben Crellin, the famous, famous within the world of, I think everyone listening to the podcast knows who this guy is, certainly. Virtually everybody, I would think. He's the one who has really helped us to figure out when these matches are going to get played, especially in light of a real lack of information from the Premier League. And, a lot of assumptions had to be made and windows that could only work. And so he just did a great job putting that all together. And so anyway, post my transfer strategy. And then he says, well, what about if he did this and this and this instead? Mm-hmm. And just sort of like sort of talking it through. And I think I caught him at like the right time or something, you know? And so
he had nothing else going on. And he said, oh, Josh could be my project for the next 15 minutes.
It almost felt that way. Right. And he's having, you know, he's having a very good season. He's doing, you know, I'm having a good season too. And he's actually, I think he's like, he's in the top 15,000, something like that. So, so once that happened, I sort of turned my head a little bit, and basically it was a plan to get Kane instead of Son. And so, so I thought that through, and I ultimately decided to make that move. Time will tell if it was the right move. Right now it's too hard to say, because if I had gone with Son, I would have captained Bruno.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's just way too early. But once I started doing that, you know how this is, like once you start thinking about the strategy and sort of trying to plan out what could work best, it's exciting and kind of stressful too. So it was, you know, it's like basically I couldn't sleep. And then I went on the Slack and I was talking to people, and then I made the move, and then I kind of regretted it. and then I went to Slack to sort of talk about it. And I just like not talk about that, but also just talk about other, you know, talk about other people's teams and things like that.
Talk about the Sopranos and things like that.
And then once I made the move, I still couldn't decide on the captain I wanted. Right. And so that's like another, like, and that 40 minutes where I'm just like debating. To me, going Kane did not necessarily mean that I had to captain him.
Back up. Yeah. You went ahead and took a -8 to work Kane and two other players into
Diaz,
your squad. Diaz and Lookman, without an idea of who you're going to captain. Because in my mind, if I get that far down a -8, in all likelihood, the person I'm bringing in is my captain. That would be why I would burn that many transfer hits.
Yeah, I mean, it's only 4 points. I mean, if I thought that Kane was going to outscore Son by more than 4 points in the game week, you know, then to me that's fine. You know, I wouldn't need to captain him.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, I think I'm certainly leaning towards it. But also, I mean, it's like, you just look at like Bruno's returns so far this season, and it is so insanely great, right? Like, it's like he just very rarely blanks. And you know, honestly, you know, he could have had a pen today. You know, certainly it's you know, it was a rare moment where he didn't have any returns. And actually, that was the reason I ultimately didn't do it. It's just because Man United have been so tight in these matches against big six teams. And they just, you know, the whole goal, it seems like, is to scrape a point. Like, whether that's the right strategy or not, I think is open for debate, right? Yeah. Because, but you know, they're
working for them more or less so far.
Exactly. So anyway, what was my point? So it was stressful. So I went to bed. I finally fell asleep around 1:30, but you know, we're in the US, the matches kick off early the next morning.
Yeah.
And I was very anxious to find out what happened with the Man City team.
Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. Because, hugely stressful. I brought in Diaz on a -4, worked out, thank goodness, but I dropped Sterling. And so my worry was, oh my God, is Sterling just going to play both these matches in the double game? So part of it was like, I was worried about whether Sterling was going to play.
Yeah.
And I was also worried about whether Diaz was going to start, and Cancelo, I sort of just didn't think he was going to start, but I still wanted to know what was happening there. So I woke up at like 6:15, like just like, cause I was so like kind of anxious sleeping. So I got like less than 5 hours sleep on Friday night. And I was like, I even talked to Kate about it, my wife, the next day. And I was like, this is like a one time. You have to understand. I was like, this is like, this really is like the biggest game week ever. I did not.
The wives
normally,
know, Josh. They know.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I would not normally advocate getting less than 5 hours sleep before one of your like weekly days off, right? It was like sort of like you end up being fried the whole next day. And then you're about to watch, you know, 10 hours of sports.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So now you've just give me a quick points check based on after your -8, you went ahead and captained Kane and you played your bench boost with triple leads. So where are you with points?
Double leads.
Right. Because you sold Bamford for Kane. Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
So tell me where you are with your points and how you're feeling about what's to come in game week 26.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm on 58 points, but that's with the -8. So it's more like 50. And my overall rank is basically like a gray arrow. I'm on 18,900 points or 18,900 rank. So, you know, pretty much neutral so far. And I still have of the like bench boost players, I sort of set my team up in a silly way, but I'm actually kind of annoyed that I didn't know, cause it's hard for me to follow everything. Mm-hmm. But so let's say the bench boost players, if I'd set it up realistically, would have been Dallas, Rafinha, Lookman, and Pope. And so, so far of those, I have, what is that, five? I have a total of 8 points, right? And I'll get one more from Pope, which I think he could do okay at home. I mean, I know they just got demolished by Spurs, but home is a different story. And no Barnes now, as we'll talk about later. And so I was like, okay, maybe I can, you know, like, so maybe I'll get a return from him there. And then Lookman, maybe I'll get something too. So even though I just got two from those players, from those two matches, that'd be like 12 points on a bench boost, which I don't think is terrible, because a lot of people have stories about bench boosts where somebody just doesn't play at all or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I, of course you want to net out like 20, 25, but I think if I end up around, if I got like 16 points, let's say, like I got, you know, I got an assist from Lookman and a clean sheet from Pope, that would get me in that 16, 20 range. And that would be a success, you know, for sure.
Yeah, I saw a few bench boosts out there with people who had Saka on their bench who didn't play. And so some bad chip luck, shall we say. For me, I couldn't resist. I kind of came around to chip talk, to favor talk later in the week. I've already played my bench boost, but, you know, speaking about how big of a game week this was, I just couldn't resist. It was partly I couldn't resist the allure, and also I convinced myself, well, strategically, this is one of the better times to play a triple captain chip.
Sure.
And so I went for Mo Salah, and it was between Bruno and Salah for me because I don't have Kane, just have Son in my midfield. And when I was looking at the dueling Chelsea fixtures, to see that Manchester United played at the Bridge against Chelsea and Liverpool actually get to host Chelsea at Anfield, you know, on paper, that gives the advantage to Mo Salah for that Chelsea fixture. Now, that isn't taking into account the fact that Liverpool are in very drab attacking form right now.
Right.
And there is this, it's just beggar's belief, right? Like, Salah is a legendary fantasy asset. Surely he can come good if we close our eyes tight enough and really hope that he does. And going into that Sheffield United match with him triple captain, I was feeling pretty optimistic. And about 20 minutes into the Sheffield United match, you're thinking, oh, right, like now suddenly, why now do I remember all of these attacking issues that Liverpool are having? So, but how sweet it will be, Josh, when Salah does come good against Chelsea.
Couple pens.
I mean, it's the last fixture of game week 26 in the double. So I at least get to hope and be optimistic for the rest of the game week.
But that was part of the rationale for going Kane over Bruno too, as I was like, if it doesn't work out and Kane just goes off on Thursday, I'm just going to be kicking myself.
Right. So I avoided hits. I did exactly what I said I was going to do last week's pod, where Lucas Digne and Dominic Calvert-Lewin came in for Danny Ings and James Justin. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to get a big boost from Everton players, but right now I'm on 49 points. And like you, it's a gray dot. I am actually on a red arrow by actual 151 ranked places.
That's so, like, right, as close as you can get to just not moving up or down at all.
Exactly. Okay, so today, Josh, what we have in store is a mailbag where we're gonna save a little game week 27 preview for the end of the pod, but the big chunk of this episode is gonna be a fun mailbag with questions from our listeners about our approach to FPL where we are in the season at the moment.
Yeah, thinking ahead, like rules for people who are, or not necessarily rules, but advice for people who are leading their mini league or in the chasing category or in the total like long shot. Like I've got a triple captain, Gareth Bale. Shout out to our friend Luke for doing that.
Yeah,
incredible.
Yep.
So that's what we're going to cover. I think it'll be kind of fun. It just felt kind of silly to do like an hour on game week 27 when, I mean, I'm sure your team is similar to mine. You know, I have a full 15 starts left from all of my players. I've got 13 players have double game weeks, and then Digne and Calvert-Lewin haven't even played yet. So 15 total starts left to go, which is kind of insane. And shout out to Emi Martinez, by the way, who was so injured he could not even kick the ball. He had to have a defender kick the ball for him, and he still finished on 10 points. So congrats.
I mean, you just sit there on a throne and say, Mr. Mings, kick the ball for me. Kick it in that general direction, my good man.
It was strange to see. I was like, I thought I had missed something at first. Like the referee was standing next to Mings and you're like, what is going on?
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
On right now,
like, yeah, did he have a toe issue or something like that?
Groin, he was worried about.
Okay,
yeah, so we'll see if he's ready for
the big toe
midweek. I looked today and looked like it was still, yeah, the big toe. It looked like it was still too early to tell. So all right, so that's the topic for this week's pod. We're opening up the mailbag. And a quick thank you to our newest Patreon supporters before we get into that. Producer patron, a brand new producer patron, Brandon Ben Sweeney. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, Thanks for supporting us at the producer
snaps
level.
Snaps and applause. Lord Soroth patrons, Tyron King, Sam Pinner, Nicholas Trones, or Trones perhaps, and Chris. Thank you to our new Lord Soroth patrons, Brandon. Lord Soroth will come back better than ever one day to the Premier League.
So what is this, our Patreon? This is how you out there, the listener, can support what Josh and I do on this podcast every week. Visit patreon.com/alwayscheating for more information on what you can get in return and what you get for supporting the cheaters. It's more FPL content. You get an extra podcast every week, our weekend review newsletter courtesy of Mini League Mate, and at the higher tiers, like our main man, Ben Sweeney, you get our Make Fantasy Fun Again t-shirt.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll get back and open that mailbag.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Maybe your fantasy team is distracting you from other important parts of your life. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in less than 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, expertise that may not be locally available in many areas. And BetterHelp is worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor, and you'll get timely, thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, and they can make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So visit betterhelp.com/cheating. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the more than 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And here's a special offer for Always Cheating listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/cheating.
All right, Brian, we're back. Mailbag time. Thinking strategically, thinking about how we make our decisions, just a little bit off the kind of week-to-week strategy talk that we would typically do on this podcast. So, opening question, Boston Prof. This is a good one. I'm going to reveal some real names here, Brandon. Boston Prof says, what are your main sources of information, other pods you listen to, Twitter accounts you follow, et cetera? He says, curious how much content producers listen to each other and if that affects their choices. He says, for example, Josh, you gave a shout out to Ben Crellin this week. We also did that at the top of this pod. So, Brandon, why don't you go first? What, you know, maybe websites too. That wasn't part of this, but I feel like that's another big one.
Right. It is a big one. And I'm not really a stats-based fantasy manager, but the main tool that I go to websites for would be player comparison tools. And I use the one primarily at Fantasy Football Scout. I know the Fantasy Football Hub also has a pretty good comparison tool. But often for me, when it comes down to a decision, it's between two specific players. And I'm relying on a gut feel, an eye test. But sometimes to break the tie, I need those stats. So I go to the Scout for that. And I like to jump on the Fantasy Premier League Reddit. That's r/fantasyPL.
Yep.
Really knowledgeable, matter-of-fact people on there, which I appreciate. They, among the places I go online, they seem the most serious about their FPL news.
Yeah, I agree.
But as far as like content from other content producers, I used to be obsessive about clearing out my podcast feed. I would be listening to The Guardian, The Totally Football Show, Football Ramble.
Yeah.
I'd be listening to The Scoutcast. I'd be listening to a bunch of other fantasy podcasts. And I have gotten to the point where it has rotted my brain. And it's it's less that I mean, I love all that content, but I just don't have any space left in my brain for it. And I don't think it's because I think that it totally influences or biases me. I'm not making time for it. Actually, I do listen to one other FPL podcast, and that's FML FPL. It's another American-based fantasy podcast. And those guys, they just offer a different perspective than I have, which I appreciate. So that's the one I do check
you've
out.
You've watched some FPL family, like you watch some YouTube stuff too, right? You watch Brett's FPL TV and some of that stuff.
Yes, yes. I do consume a lot of YouTube, and that pops up there. And Andy from Let's Talk right. FPL. Yeah, yep, exactly. Yep. I don't keep up with them religiously, but that's probably the most chill way for me to consume fantasy content is the YouTube style.
Yeah. I am kind of like with you. I mean, I used to listen to like so many fantasy podcasts, so many regular podcasts, and honestly, it's really informed the approach that we try to do with this podcast, I think, too, which is because for me, I just want to be entertained now. You know, I mean, I think that there are times when, you know, I mean, a podcast like ours, we can't just, first of all, we're not entertaining enough. You know, we need to be talking about strategy a little bit too to make people, you know, come back. But I think for me, I always try to keep one eye on, make fantasy fun again as a credo was sort of rooted in this, right? This idea that like, we need to make sure that we don't forget the fun, you know, and that that's something I still struggle with, right? I mean, the whole reason to invent this label was to remind myself to do this as well, you know? And so I like Second Captains a lot as I know you do. I like the Totally Football Show as well. I have been in the fantasy podcast, I'll jump around and I'll listen to a ton, you know, and you know, I like the but I mean the one I've liked recently actually is the Black Box one. And I like that because Mark Southerns from Scout is Mark, I was going to say Mark because his podcast with Grenville, the original Scoutcast, was the inspiration for Must Create Our Own podcast, right? Yeah. You know, 7 years ago or whatever it was. And so it's kind of fun to listen to him because it just like brings me back to the kind of a very different time in fantasy, right? Before, before Patreon, for example. You know, things have changed a lot in the last several years.
Shout out to whoever does the graphics for FPL Black Box. Like their branding is on point. It is excellent.
Yeah, I'm reluctant to get too much into it because, I mean, we're just obviously friends with a lot of these people. I mean, I've listened to, a million Scoutcast episodes over the years. You know, I love Tom Cantill. I mean, I actually think that Tom Cantill's Twitter feed, the Who Got the Assist Twitter feed, is maybe the most essential Twitter feed for anybody who just wants to know what is actually going on in the world. Like he's got like all the latest information, like no piece of news breaks that he isn't on top of. And so I think that it's really one of the most essential, Twitter feeds that you can follow to stay updated. And I think in general, Twitter is really where I'm going for my information, partially because I'm on there just as a way to get the podcast in front of people. You know, I mean, I'm sort of on there talking about stuff, and I mean, I don't want to say I'm marketing the pod, but I mean, I guess in some ways, certainly like the day after a pod goes out, I'm
trying
to get the word
out. Affinity for the pod, Josh.
Maybe, you know, but I think just once you're on there, then you start just talking to a lot of other people. And so like, you know, I mean, like the hub, for example, is just full of really smart minds, right? And a lot of them have Twitter accounts as well. And so, I think that's a great place to go for like, just like I remember listening to or reading some article. I don't remember who said it anymore, but there was something about like, when you're thinking about like who your captain, like who you want your captain to be, for example, it's like, if it's somebody that everybody is talking about, that's one option. If it's somebody that a few people are talking about, that's one option. If nobody's talking about it, you might not want to consider going with them as a captain, right? Mm-hmm. And so like just having a lot of Twitter accounts on there is a good way to kind of read the temperature a little bit, you know, like what are like some reasonable picks, you know? And often like the captain thing was just one example, but it's good to kind of get a, you know, I mean, you don't want to just end up with like the same team as everybody else, but it's also, there is like, usually it's a pretty smart community and, you know, typically they're on top of, you know, rising stars, sort of ahead of everybody else. And so I think that Twitter can be useful. I just think you have to like really watch your intake. You know, I think that you can absorb too much of it. Then you kind of forget.
You can overdose, Josh.
Yeah. And then you kind of forget which opinions are yours, you know, and which ones you just kind of read online. It's like, you know, those comedians like steal jokes, right? And they're like, you know what? I saw the joke and I loved it. And then 5 years later, I remembered it, you know, and I thought I came up with it, you know, and I feel like that way about fantasy strategy sometimes where I'm just like, well, did I actually, like, do I want to go with this captain, or have I just heard so many people talk about it that now I'm like convinced it's the right move?
Yeah. You know? So. This is a good segue to the next question, Josh, that comes from Jeff, who asks, talk us through your general approach to decision-making. How much of it is eye test versus stats versus gut feel versus outside influence, i.e. conversations with our supporters on the Slack, conversations we have on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or conversations that you and I have on this actual podcast. So I'm interested in this idea, as I was thinking about Jeff's question, the idea of eye test.
Yeah.
What do we talk enough about what eye test means? Because I think eye test is a much more abstract idea than we actually give it credit for.
Yeah.
Eye test to me is, okay, you saw Gareth Bale this week is a great example of
it.
Gareth Bale has basically been taking the piss out of Spurs for this entire season. Yeah. And suddenly he works his way through Europa to get a start against Burnley. And he looks pretty good. And he scores a brace. And he's smiling. He looks happy. He still won't let anybody touch his top knot. But there you are. Eye test would tell you, all right, Gareth Bale looks pretty good. Should we start thinking about him? But the eye test is not just one match. The eye test is over the course of many matches. Your eyes can so easily deceive you, the same way stats can deceive you. So if you're an eye test manager or a stats manager, I think you still have to specify the fact that there is no shortcut here. The eye test has to be proven out over the course of a period of time, because the other way that you can have a general approach to fantasy managing is through knee jerking. Yeah. And I feel like over 10 seasons of FPL, that's the one thing I've probably successfully beaten out of myself is knee jerking. But on the whole, I don't know. What would you say most decisions you make in a season are influenced by gut feel or what?
Yeah, I think it is. I was thinking earlier about, we're talking about data, and it's like I sort of feel like I'm kind of with you too, where it's like I don't think of myself as a data-driven manager, but I've also been a patron supporter of Mikkel Tokvin's stat charts, you know, for the last like 2 years now, and I refer to it every week. Right. So it's like, I feel like I'm not someone who pulls my own stats, but I'm very friendly when it comes to reading them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like what I often will do is I will watch, and like you, I mean, you and I just watch a lot of matches, right? I mean, partially because we want to do it, partially because we're addicted, which I guess is maybe the same thing, partially because we want to be ready to talk about these matches on the podcast. It was actually easier when there were like five of them in the same block, and then you kind of half watch, like, you know, a bunch of them.
The dopamine drip is a lot slower these days,
It's harder now. I mean, I've pulled back. I don't watch the 20 hours a week, you know, like I did in the fall. You know?
Right. But stats, I think it's like it's for me, it's stats are a tiebreaker. If I've got this gut feeling or my eye test is telling me something and I need another layer, that's when I go to the stats.
Yeah. It's almost like, I'll watch the matches and then I will make what I think are my choices, right? Like the things I'm planning to do that week. And I will often use that almost to like, be like, am I crazy here? You know what I mean? It's like, I think like, oh, like I'm considering Gundogan or whatever, right? A few weeks ago. And it's like, well, where does he even rank in these stat tables, right? Like, as you know, like these sort of weighted, you know, charts that are put out, and, you know, just like, is this actually crazy? And so that's, I find where the data is good. And I feel like it almost always starts with my own opinion though. I don't feel like I go around, I don't cast about looking for, you know, an article that will help me make a decision so much as I have a decision that I want to make based on my own kind of instincts. And then I will, it's not that I'm looking for bias, like confirmation bias or whatever. No, I'm not looking to like back up my own opinion. I'm just looking to see if my opinion's right or not. And I think for me, the other big thing is that I almost never make a transfer for one game week. I'm not a hokey cokey type manager. I just cannot, it doesn't work. I don't think that's an effective strategy. I think that it can really come back to bite you. So anytime I make a transfer, I'm really trying to think at least 3 to 5 game weeks ahead. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that's just a good advice in general, I think.
There's a line in Dave Eggers' heartbreaking work of Staggering Genius where he's talking about his dad who's recently passed, and fond memory he has of his dad is how his dad always talked about how he was such a good driver. And he'd say, well, you know what makes me a good driver? I'm always thinking 10 moves ahead of every other driver on the road. So that's kind of where you want to be as a fantasy manager.
Yeah, I think that's right, because otherwise you find yourself in a position. I mean, honestly, even just looking at what the fixture is the week after you get a player. Right. Like, let's say you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to solve my defensive crisis by bringing in Soufal. Right. Uh-huh. You know, because, he plays Sheffield United at home. And then you bring that player in, and then you're like, wait, he plays Man City, Man United, and you know, Leeds away in the next 3 game weeks. You know, I can't play this guy for four more weeks. Yeah. So I think that alone is something. That's not even stats. That's just like data, right? It's just like actual information that's out
crude
there.
Oil.
Yeah, exactly. And that brings us to the third question here, which is kind of the third and final, I think, thought process question here. Mig says, I appreciate Adam Hopcraft explaining how having his pod actually influences his decisions. Is that something you struggle with at all? How do you reflect, move on, and still have fun with it?
It's a great question. I think like my process actually starts because we record Always Cheating every Sunday night, usually as one game week ends and we start planning for the next. So
yeah.
My thinking more or less starts when you and I discuss our teams and other people's dilemmas here on this podcast. So doing the Always Cheating podcast has been nothing but helpful for me in managing my own team. I mean, obviously, when you start doing a podcast and people become interested in your content and then your team related to that.
Yep.
The scrutiny can kind of get into your head, but that's why I've always kind of been shy about not sharing my team on my own social media. I kind of want to keep that for me, like much like people who don't like sharing pictures of their kids on their social media. That's kind of how I approach it. What I really love about FPL, beyond you and I talking about our teams, is just interacting in the discourse, talking about more general problems and having that conversation. It's less about my team. It's more about what's going on in the Premier League and the fantasy game as a whole.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way. I mean, the team reveals to me, sometimes I'm like, I throw it out there and I'm like, I don't even want to read the at replies, you know, like I don't want anyone to mess with my, with my thinking too much here, because you know how it is. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, if you hear a negative, you know, it's like the negative stuff just sticks with you so much longer than the positive stuff, you know, like it's like, you know, if you, you know, the way a bad film review will suddenly make you think about a film in a different light, even a film you enjoyed, you know? And so someone will be like, you cannot captain that guy or whatever, you know? And even if you're like, I trust my process, I trust my decision-making, hearing someone kind of scoff at something you've done, mm-hmm. even if they're like just some random person you don't even know, mm-hmm. It does kind of get in your head a little bit. And I think
the hashtag, once you see it, you can't unsee
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's sort of like a kind of well-known problem that a lot of people have, like the when they get into like really serious, you know, content creation, you know, if they start to do a YouTube channel or create a podcast or whatever, where you do like, you start to like snap to a grid a little bit with your decisions, where you kind of, you don't want to go too far off the beaten path because you don't have to explain it to somebody later, yeah, you know? Right, and right. So you're not quite as, in some ways you end up having less fun, you know? And so you have these people who are like, spending a lot of time in fantasy and they're like, I don't even like this anymore. You know? And it's sort of, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. It's the way you hear about like all sports writers hate sports, you know, it's like once you start getting into the business of creating content around it, it does change your opinion. I mean, I still love watching matches and all that stuff, but, I'm with you though. I mean, I love doing the podcast and, we wouldn't keep doing it. I mean, you know, if we didn't love doing it, it's, you know, it's super fun. So, it's worth any hit we may take on the overall rank.
For sure. For the curious listener, you can go to alwayscheating.com and the about tab, and there are links to our team. So we are not, I'm certainly not hiding it from you. If you want to look at my team, you're more than welcome to.
Yeah. And I share mine almost every week on Twitter. So you can see it there. Though sometimes I do wait until after the deadline, so nobody can convince you to change my mind. Yeah. All right, let's pivot to some different questions here, Brandon. These are just some fun ones here. James Keatley says, who is the most overrated, widely picked player in FPL? For me, it's Cancelo. All everyone talks about is what he could do, yet he's only delivered one goal and two assists all season and is a regular six-pointer at very best, usually.
That is a good pick, because the issue with this question, though, is Cancelo is he's always just these marginal moments and matches away from actually being that player. So it's kind of unfair to Cancelo, if you follow me. But
yeah,
who are these other players? I mean, I think Jamie Vardy has kind of gotten away with it this season. And I was shocked to see so much talk about Jamie Vardy going into game week 26 because, I mean,
he
and
had
this
a hot
is coming,
start, you know,
he did have a hot start. Yeah. And I don't know if I have a platform on which to speak about this, because I'm the guy who triple captained Mo Salah, who has also kind of been out of form himself. But Vardy, to me, it was more plain through my eyes to see that he was kind of overrated going into this game week.
Wow. That's why you retweeted a tweet of yours from 4 days ago, right? Telling everybody that they were sheep if they...
attention sheeple. rat face Jamie Vardy is a scam and you're an idiot if you bought into that. I deleted that tweet shortly thereafter.
No, I mean, he does not have a double-digit return since game week 14. Has battled a lot of injuries. Yeah, I think he's a good one. I think, you know, Cancelo is probably... rightly, I mean, he's the most owned defender in the game. And yet, I think, you know, Stones and Diaz. I mean, Stones is interesting. Like, first of all, that what a beautiful goal. I don't know how he got that far up, like, kind of snuck in front of everybody.
Great technique. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, yeah. Well taken, too. Still a little worried about whether he's going to rotate with Laporte, but I mean, certainly Diaz, right? Diaz is, the one you would want over Cancelo.
Right.
As far as overrated, I mean, I was just looking by ownership here. I mean, there's nobody, I guess at this point, any Liverpool defender, like, I mean, Robertson or Trent, those players would be pretty thoroughly overrated at this point.
Well, I mean, I keep complicating these questions. We should be trying to get through these episodes, Josh, in like a cool 35 minutes, but yet I can't resist because it's not Trent's fault. It's not Robertson's fault that they got priced by FPL at 7.5. I mean, I guess it is their fault because they had such phenomenal seasons previously.
Right.
But clean sheets today against Sheffield United, a Trent's back in form. I mean, they look good. They're not okay. FPL is just totally warping this idea.
Clean sheets versus I mean, same thing with Mo Salah, right? I mean, Mo Salah would be scoring more goals if you had Van Dijk back there and you didn't have to have like the entire central midfield fill in at center back, and you know, it's before they all got injured. You know, I mean, that clearly hurts him as much as it hurts Robertson and Trent. But if we're thinking of overrated, it's like purely in the sense of like highly owned players that we wouldn't have in our own teams. I, of course, have Cancelo on my own team.
Yeah.
Has not worked out so hot for me so far. But I mean, it's worked out okay. I guess I've gotten a couple of clean sheets, but I could have gone Diaz first, and I ended up buying him when he'd already raised. He'd gone up 0.6 in price. I think that, you know, I mean, all Man United players in general tend to be a little overrated. I mean, outside of Bruno, right? Just because they're such a popular club that people just love having Man United players in their team. And I mean, you know, again, I mean, Wan-Bissaka, you know, honestly, I guess he's been a little better.
Luke Shaw is like the guy.
Reverse. Yeah,
it's Bruno and Luke Shaw on that team. But I'm with you. If going back to that Liverpool fullback argument, Wan-Bissaka is a relatively one dimensional FPL asset.
Yep.
Attacking returns are just not his forte.
So Brandon, the eighth most highly owned defender in the game costs less than $4 million. Can you name that player?
Is it Tariq Mitchell?
It is.
Nice.
Yeah,
he's owned
by 15% of managers still have him in their team. More highly owned than Ben Chilwell, Matt Target, and Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Everybody, people love a good deal, Josh.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Another player who blew up a number of bench boosts this week by not making this the first team.
You know, Eric Dyer, too. I saw some people have, you know, he didn't play either. I don't think he was injured either. I think that was just a tactical change.
He's not great, Josh. Just word on the street.
That's a
He's
factor.
Not been doing that all that a, well that for factor. Spurs.
All right. This next one says is from Byron Brew. He says, how should we approach the final game weeks based on our position, i.e. those leading the mini leagues, those in the chasing packs, and those lagging behind? So, Brandon, you, I guess, would you qualify yourself as in the chasing pack? Is that where you think of yourself right now?
It certainly depends on your goal. I have been a part of the chasing pack for the entire season. And
pace setter.
Is
the person in front the pace setter? I guess I can't remember.
You've got the pace car. If we're talking about a car race.
That's what I was thinking. Pace car. Right?
Pace car.
Yeah. Yeah.
If the question is, do I want to finish number one in the world? I will be chasing until they put me 6 feet under, Josh. But I've been chasing since game week 9 was my first real green arrow, and that was around 3 million, and now I'm up to 160K.
Yep.
Okay, so it was a long way to get to where I am now, and I'm tired, Josh. What do I want out of this season? I just want to get out of the season with a 5-digit rank. That's really all I care about at this point, so okay. I just need 70K, a 70K rank boost. Does that mean I'm chasing? I think I probably am. And the reason why I think even if you're up in that area, you're chasing is because now to get any kind of a rise, like a 10K rise, a 20K rise, any kind of a chunk rise, you're going to have to fight through a bunch of managers who have similar teams than you. They have similar approaches to the game probably as you. So I think that's where the chase element comes in. So, but what does that mean? For me, I think why I have had this long run of green arrows that's really changed the trajectory of my season is because I have not really thought of myself as chasing. I have just tried to normalize my approach. I've tried to rationalize my approach. Mm-hmm. I have not gone too outside of the box. I've just tried to correct mistakes. And sometimes correcting mistakes is boring. Because
are you going to get that tattoo on your knuckles removed then? The one that says ABC, always be chasing?
Always be chasing. I mean, maybe that's what we'll find out about me after the season is over, is that I intentionally sabotaged my game week 3 wild card just so I could really get off on the chasing this entire season. I mean, that's kind of sick in hindsight. But,
yeah.
but I think the strategy for people chasing is is, from my perspective, less about being maverick and it's more about correcting your mistakes.
Yeah, I think that's right. I used to be of the opinion that if you were chasing, you wanted to be a little more maverick, a little more aggressive. And now I'm not so sure about that, because I think the real approach, I think, and I know this because I know that when I am leading in many leagues, I know that I'm playing my best game, right? Like when I am leading in many leagues, I typically, I don't want to say run away with them, but like, once I have a firm lead established in a mini league, I wouldn't normally give it up. Right. And I think it's because I typically play smarter when I'm doing well, because I am not thinking about anybody else's team. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just playing. I'm just like you said, I'm just sort of playing my best game and fixing my weakest links. I'm following my instincts, whatever, mm-hmm. like the instincts that got me there. And I think that approach still works if you are in the chasing pack. And because in most cases, people, you don't need to change anything because other people won't be able to resist, right? Like if you just keep doing, like, it's not like, you know, don't give the person above you credit in most cases for being smart, like for like trying to block your move, you know, or to like try to like, they're not going to try to cover 9 out of your 11 players that you can't overtake them. You know, who's got the time? So they're just going to do whatever they're going to do. And so if you just play exactly the way you think is best and you don't think about them at all,
yes,
that is a strategy that can actually overtake that person.
Oh, Josh, you know, I can't resist our favorite Mad Men quote of all time, where mm-hmm. Don gets in the elevator with Ginsburg, the copywriter, this lowly copywriter.
Yeah.
Lowly copywriter looks at Don and he says, "Don, I feel sorry for you."
Yeah.
Don doesn't even look at Ginsburg and he says, "I don't think about you at all." And that may be a lesson for fantasy managers is don't give the people in your mini league the satisfaction that you're actually thinking about them.
Is that better than "how about a thank you?" And then he says, "That's what the money is for." That's a pretty good one too.
Okay. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Every episode has one of the best quotes you could imagine. Mad Men's great. All right.
I think if you're lagging way behind though, and I gave a shout out to Luke earlier, I think that that's, if you're like, you know, six, you know, if it's, we're in game week 26 right now, if you're 632,000, to me, I would be all about triple captaining Gareth Bale and making those kind of moves, because that's the only way you're going to catch up. And what's the difference between, I mean, like, unless you care about like Hall of Fame fantasy stats or whatever, like, I feel like I would go for it. And I, you know, it's like either like you're going to end up, you know, in the 100K, you're going to end up 2.2 million and, mm-hmm. and who cares, right? Like, what's the difference? I mean, like, you know, what's the difference between like, you know, if you're in 600K and you keep slowly climbing your way up and you finish 277,000 or something, it's like, what's the difference really? You know, it feels
like you've been scored on, right? So you have to open up your defense. You have to push men farther forward. Right. You have to go for it.
That's perfect. I'm going to move on to the next question from there. Red Dagger, he was giving me some grief about this, and I put this in here because I thought it was kind of funny. Okay, I'm going to ask it. I can't help myself. When you switched your captain to Kane after absolutely trashing him on the kitchen table pod, I wouldn't say I trashed him. I just said he wasn't worth blowing up your team over.
We poured cold water on the Kane Brigade on the Patreon podcast.
We did a Patreon podcast where you and I were both quite firm in our Bruno captaincies. And I said, no way am I blowing my team up to get Kane. You said that Salah was one of the 5 worst players in the Premier. No, I mean, I'm just kidding. But we were just sort of like, it was the kind of week where I didn't want to do like any kind of like serious advice strategy sessions, because I don't like to do that when I don't have a firm handle on the game week myself. And
well, listen, what we said was true, Josh. Give us some credit. What we said was true. We said Son is probably much easier to fit into the structure of your team, and that's proper coverage for the Spurs-Burnley match. And guess what? Son outscored Kane by 5 points.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens after the Fulham match. But I mean, it clearly, unless Kane just outscores some by 18 points or something in that one, that it's going to end up being more or less accurate. I'm happy with the Kane pick, because there was an element of risk management to it as well. I mean, Kane's effective ownership in the top 10K is like 140% or something like that this week. So if he had really gone off and I didn't have him captain, that really could have hurt me, right? Because he's heavily triple captain. So there was an element of like, well, let me just do this and take the minus four. And I'm sort of defended against a massive.
So to go back to the analogy I had earlier of if you're chasing rank, if you're like 650K overall, you want to push men forward. What you did was you actually brought on a third center back by bringing Kane into your
team. Sometimes it works. And sometimes you
give
you
up
follow,
a penalty in the 92nd minute.
Yeah. Sometimes you follow at the midway line and give Dominic Calvert-Lewin a chance to equalize in 90 minutes. All right. So when I switched to Kane, how did I feel about it? I actually felt a little bad. I actually went on the Slack and told everyone. I like paid penance. this is, we talked about the moving target. When we do these podcasts and we mean what we say when we say them, you know, but obviously we record them day or two or week ahead in some cases. Of course things are going to change a little bit. But what else are you going to do? You're going to record a podcast Friday night at 11 p.m. and no one would be able to listen to it before
nor do we want to record a podcast where everything we say we have to caveat. Well, this is what I'm thinking. Boring. However, I might do something different. Like, who cares?
So just
what you're saying, we say what we feel and what we believe in that moment. There's no subterfuge on this podcast.
If I had like a piece of advice for content creators, it'd be just have a strong opinion. It's like true about any like pundit class thing, right? It's like if you're like a Republican talk radio host, right? It's like the same approach.
Sure. Yeah. Don't be an asshole though.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So two more questions here. And then we'll do a quick break and then we'll talk about game week 27 for a minute. Benno says, do you think the Premier League is lacking a bit of passion right now? Maybe it's the lack of fans, but I miss those crazy comebacks, someone smashing a winner, etc. It all feels a bit Anthony Martial and emotionless at the moment. No offense to the guy. Nil-nils between the big teams, for example. Am I just not watching the right games?
I think that Benno's take here is correct, as much as I can judge it to be correct. You can see a number of players, and certainly some managers are feeling it, like Klopp is just losing his mind this season.
Yeah.
But then you look at a player like Ruben Diaz, who he just can't believe how he's got this move to a huge club like Manchester. Well, not saying he didn't come from a huge club, but he's gotten a really great move to a great club where he's making the most of it. And when I watch Diaz play, he's incredibly intense and full of passion.
Yeah.
However, then you look at Sergio Aguero. I mean, good luck finding this guy on the pitch during during that match, during that West Ham match. Terrible, just terrible stuff.
Yeah,
I think it's interesting to approach this question less from a league standpoint and more player by player, because I think some players 100% don't know what to do without any feedback from the fans. Other players are out there doing the James Milner, this is a job and I'm going to do it well. And then there are other players who are just like, I love this. This is brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, I assume like a Patrick Bamford, right? Probably likes having no fans in the stands, right? Like he is sort of derided as a flop, right? He's 27 years old, right? I mean, he kicked around a bunch of different teams before finding a home there. And someone like Bruno clearly does not like, he would feels like he's the kind of guy who would play exactly the same if you had 100,000 fans there or nobody. I think it does. I think the real problem is, well, first of all, there's a couple things. One is,
Let me get my popcorn here.
Yeah, I prefer watching matches that, obviously they're all the games are during the day for us in the US, but I prefer the matches that take place in the evenings because the lack of a crowd isn't quite as, you don't feel it quite as much. There's something about, like, I think this was for the Manchester match, for the Man City West Ham match on Saturday morning. That's the 12:30 kickoff or whatever. And they sort of like do like one of those, you know, like the TV like sort of pans in and gives you a panorama of everything. And you just see this Etihad Stadium, you know, whatever it seats, you know, at least 60,000 or so people, right? Just completely empty. And then you see these 22 players in the bottom of the pitch. And it does feel
lined up in some sort of ceremonial, you know, procession. And it's ridiculous. Yes.
Yeah. And it just feels like it makes the whole thing feel kind of small, you know, and when you have 70,000 fans there or whatever, there is a kind of like mass like feeling, you know, it's like the love of, you know, we talked about this before, I think on the pod before, but like just this kind of, it's like the rituals of sport feel disrupted, you know, the things about it that make it enjoyable. And I mean, all you have to do is like literally just watch highlights from like last October 2019, right? Like just watch a highlight from any match when there were still fans in the stands, and you will not believe how exciting it seems. It seems thrilling to see a match at Anfield with, you know, that's why obviously, like, you know, I think the final two games of the season, we might see that, and, you know, it won't be that crazy, but, you know, hopefully by next fall, I mean, fingers crossed, you know, we're going to have that experience back. And that's the, you know, and so I think the big issue is that it feels like there's no big games anymore. You know, like no match seems big to me. Even that Liverpool, the Liverpool Man City match a couple weeks ago, it just didn't feel that big to me, because it's hard for a match to feel big when there are no fans there, because it just feels like, you know, it's like, I don't know. Just, it all makes it, it just feels like, I mean, you know, they're doing their best, and like, I'm glad that there's games on, and it's been a great, thing for me. I mean, I don't know, you know, it's like, it's helpful. It's helped kill the time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I was thinking a bit about commentary while watching the games this weekend, and the thought of, I'm blanking on the guy's name, but the guy who does the Barcelona play-by-play out of Florida, he does
Ray Hudson. Yeah.
He calls all those matches for a B-in, I think it is, from a studio in Florida. Like, he's not there.
Yeah.
And
it's like in his house or something, isn't it? Or it's,
right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, what do I generally don't care about commentary. I would kind of prefer to not care about it. But one of the things that commentary does for me is watching the TV broadcast is they can tell me about things that are happening in the stadium that I can't see. What's going down below on the touchline, what's happening off screen, what's a player doing who I can't see. What they can also tell me, which I love, is when a home stadium is, you know, quote, rocking. And sometimes you can tell commentators are at the point where they actually feel this might be dangerous. Like this platform is actually shaking and we could fall to our death.
You and I were at the Manchester Derby last spring, one of the final matches with fans, right? Yeah. You and I were at the final two matches of the Premier League season, in the Premier League that Allah had full fans in attendance because we went to the Manchester Derby and then we went to the Leicester match and that was it. But the stadium was absolutely rocking when McTominay scored that last goal, and it felt a little dangerous.
Yeah. So point there being is, how can that not impact what you see on the pitch? How can that not help change the trajectory of the drama that you're seeing? So 100%, if you take the fans away, the product has changed entirely.
It'd be interesting to think about the players who really, really are hurt by it. You know, I mean, I guess there could be a strategic element. I mean, but you don't really know. I mean, like someone like Sadio Mane, I don't think of him as the most emotional dude, but I don't know. It feels like he is the kind of guy who maybe is suffering a little bit without fans there. All right. Final question. We can take this one very quickly. Lightning round style. Sam Danby says, what goal in history would you most want to be able to recreate yourself?
What goal in history? It's the Roberto Carlos free kick where he bends it.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
And just like the feeling that he must have had when his laces made I don't know if he hit it with his laces or what kind of technique he used, but that must have been orgasmic.
I thought about this. I've thought about this for a few hours since the question was posted. If you have a good one, you can hit us up on Slack or Twitter and let us know. The one that I thought of, though, was the Luis Suarez free kick goal against Norwich City, where he scored it. He scored on a free kick that, you know, Luis Suarez like sort of famously just always destroyed Norwich. And he scored on a free kick from like 40 yards out. Mm-hmm. And it was like – just like the ability to beat a keeper from like 40 yards on a free kick with like that kind of power and precision, you would feel like you are the greatest player in the world. Like you would feel like no
poor
one was
John Ruddy. I'm sure I'm assuming that was on John Ruddy.
Yeah. Wolves backup keeper now, right? Or I used to be anyway.
He's out there somewhere in the world. Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll get back and we'll talk about Game Week 27.
Attention aspiring podcasters, Brandon here, and I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and you just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part of it, you can get all of this for only $15 a month. That's the same rate as any other hosting site that they would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports podcasting experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. But again, that's bwhustle.com/join.
All right, Brian, we're back. Game Week 27, you know, not, it's hard to talk about because there are so many matches left to play. We could see injuries, and I think the real question is, you know, who you want to captain this week, because it is another double game week. It's a mini double game week. This is the third double in a row, and that's because Man City and Southampton are making up a match that needed to be – is this – I actually don't remember if it's a made-up match from earlier the season or if it's to make up for the Cup final. I can't remember. It's all like blending together, but regardless. And so it's hard to answer the question of which player you'd want to captain. I mean, because for you, it's James Ward-Prowse all the way, and I get that, you know. But yeah, for me, I'm probably going to go a Man City player. So I'm
– controversial.
Yeah, I have three. I have Gundogan. I have – Cancelo, and I have Diaz, and whoever doesn't start on Wednesday this week it's Tuesday, they play on Tuesday, would be the player that I would seriously consider, especially because Man City play Man United on Sunday. So it's the Manchester Derby. You'd expect the strongest team, perhaps strongest team, to play in that match. Yep. But if Gundogan has played like five in a row at that point, maybe I worry a little bit about him getting rested, despite the caliber of that match. So, you know, Ria Bento says, how good of an FPL asset is Gundo with KDB back? Can you answer that question, Brendan? Can you also talk a little bit about Game Week 27 captains?
Well, the answer to that question is Gundogan has not delivered since KDB has been back in the starting lineup, and it's pretty cut and dry. And just to watch Man City play West Ham on Saturday morning, Gundogan was not very involved. Even when he was involved, he just didn't look like the sharp attacking midfielder
that was. Well, right?
Mm-hmm. And the thing that does stick out to you is the intervention of Kevin De Bruyne. But I don't know. I can't still be convinced that this is down to De Bruyne fundamentally changing the system. Now, that one of those games, you had Aguero who came back into the lineup, and as I mentioned, he just was invisible and contributed nothing.
Yeah, he wasn't so hot either early on. Got better. Yeah. You know, a great assist, obviously.
I do think that Man City's passing against West Ham was entirely off. Now, there was never a moment in which, even when West Ham equalized, and West Ham, to give them credit, did look good, there was still never a moment where I thought City weren't going to win that match. However, I did think that they looked, compared to the way they've looked the last couple of months, not great. Their passing was really bad. Yeah. So I don't want to fully blame Gundogan for that. But the final answer to this question is, yes, Gundogan is now officially on a short leash, mostly because just in shrewd FPL terms, he's no longer returning. But he's not your weakest link. He's not urgent because Gundogan still costs, 6.2 million?
Yeah.
There is no appropriate asset, I think, to replace him with at this point. Now, we're going to talk about mid-price midfielders in a moment. And I think once you get closer to game week 29, that's when it makes sense for me to drop Gundogan. But at this point, unless you're planning to somehow move up to De Bruyne or Sterling, Gundogan's just fine for me.
Yeah, and honestly, it feels like they're all kind of like washing each other out, right? It's like there's like, is it really worth moving to De Bruyne or Sterling for five extra million or whatever? You know, it's like, are they that much? Are you getting that much more? I know that De Bruyne got three bonus today, but he still doesn't look like he's going to score any. He does not look capable of scoring a bunch of open play goals, for example. And I think that.
Well, okay, so you wanted to talk. Captain, you wanted me to jump back into the captaincy part of the question, which I will.
Part question.
I will.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's Ruben Dias. I think Ruben Dias is going to be one of the bigger pieces of this captaincy discussion all week. And that's going to be. We're going to sweat that one because, in all likelihood, Dias starts against. He starts against Wolves on Tuesday.
Sure.
Then he's definitely starting in the Manchester Derby. So then you're like, okay, now where are we with Pep's rotation, et cetera?
Yeah.
And looking at that Southampton match.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a lot of jitters when it comes to Dias, but Dias does jump out at me as the best captaincy option right now.
If I suppose I would almost like to see Gundogan get rested now on Tuesday of this week. And if he does, then I would probably still go with him as the captain because I would assume that he would play the next 2 weeks. And I would hope that this – I totally agree about him not having a role with KDB out. I think there's a chance that KDB does not start both those matches as well. I mean, I guess you're just going to have the strongest team for the Manchester Derby. So there's just no getting around it. The slight worry about having a Liverpool defender captain is I think Man United could – well, Man United do not score goals when they play top six teams. So, is that going to change? I don't know. Like, are they really going to go with their, safety first strategy in this match? I mean, this is they kind of need to win. They have any hope for the title, which I'm sure they don't even really think is realistic anymore, but they have to at least try for it, right?
They have pride, Josh.
Yeah, exactly. You got to try to win this match. So, and Bruno is just always dangerous, right? And they're always capable of winning a pen or something like that. So, I'm leaning towards Gundogan, but again, it depends. And I suppose Kinsella would have to be someone I'd consider. Just got the full rest, right? The full 90-minute rest. He's been starting most matches. So it just feels so painful to have him when you just don't know. That's why I hate having, a heavily rotated fullback from a club like Man City in my team because I just – when I wildcarded, he's almost certainly not going to stay in that team, right? I'm just going to go Stones and Dias. And if Stones, gets rotated more heavily, then so be it, because it's too frustrating.
I do have the ultimate hack, Josh. I do have Ederson in my team.
Yeah. So this might be the week to do it. Someone on Twitter going into this week was like, should we consider Ederson? He's got the assist threat too. And just the idea that you can say that Ederson has assist threat and it's not a joke is amazing to me.
I mean, the problem with the assist threat is that he already did it. He's not going to get more. I predict, I cannot say with certainty, but I predict he won't come close to another assist. The question is, will it be Penderson? Will he actually get to take this elusive penalty?
No, I don't think so. It's just too risky, right? You hit that off the crossbar and then someone catches it right, someone with a decent bit of accuracy.
Speaking of crossbar penalties, can we spare a thought for Brighton fans? I play this score prediction game off on the side, and I had that game at a 1-1. And I couldn't believe the number of times that Brighton missed an opportunity to draw level with West Brom to the point where I was like, well, I'm fine not predicting the right score because this should be 5-1 to Brighton.
It was 3.1 XG, I think, for Brighton in that match, which is, pretty massive. Mm-hmm. All right. So the other big question about Game Week 27, this doesn't affect either of us, but it affects a lot of fantasy managers out there, which is Harvey Barnes. Harvey Barnes finally emerges. We go all in on him on last week's podcast. We Absolutely. Say he's for real. We finally buy it. We see the light. He is now out for what might end up being the rest of the season, right? And so no more Harvey Barnes. Maybe we'll see him in game week 35 or something. Who knows, right? But, you know, it just sort of depends. Especially if it's a serious injury, then even when they're done rehabbing, you don't necessarily want to risk them, right? So Barnes is up. Who do we want? And Aloha Lounge says, is Lingard a legit replacement for Barnes? So with Barnes out, Brandon, if you were in that position, let's say you had less than $8 million to spend, who are you leaning towards?
Well, Lingard is, I kind of scoffed at Lingard as a pick because it did feel kind of knee jerky. He got that brace right off the bat. And in spite of that, I wasn't a believer, but I saw the stat today that since Lingard started starting for West Ham, I think it's four game weeks now, he's scored 39 FPL points, which is the fourth most FPL points across the league. Wow. So that is pretty impressive.
It's impressive.
And here is
five starts. Yep. And three goals and two assists.
And the other piece of that is, you know, I think this transfer, if you're looking to replace Harvey Barnes, should be geared toward a team that plays in game week 29. Yep. West Ham is one of those teams. But I think my preferred option in that case is Arsenal's Bukayo Saka. And, you know, he did get rested this week, but as we know, he's a phenomenal player. And I don't think Arteta is going to rely on Willian for many other games this season.
Yeah.
So Saka, I think, is going to be my pick. And 5.2 leaves you some extra money in the bank to shore up your team elsewhere. Maybe bring in somebody like Henderson.
I like Saka. I think the other player I'd consider would be Jack Grealish if he didn't have three Aston Villa players already. The talk is that he may be back for the midweek match. If not, there's a decent chance we'll see him at the weekend. So it's hard to say. He's in that like unknown return date category right now. So we just don't know exactly when that will be. We don't even really know that much about the injury, right? It's like a shin.
Yeah, they haven't been very clear about it. And there's this cryptic message from Dean Smith where he's talking about Grealish's return. And he says, Jack could be back to play for Sheffield United next Tuesday or Wolves next week. Will be led by Jack on that. So Jack's in charge. He's on his own. He's in charge of his own injury. He'll pick up the phone and call you when he's ready.
Okay. So nobody knows Jack. We'll find out soon enough what's happening there. But I think that, you'll know by Friday whether Grealish is an option. And he's not the kind of player who's going to get 8 minutes off the at the end of a match, right? Like if he's back, I feel like he's starting and playing something close to the full 90.
Yeah, and he's one of those players I would lump into that passion player group where I've so enjoyed watching Aston Villa this season, largely because Grealish doesn't care if it's a scrimmage or if he's playing for the World Cup. He's giving the same level of intensity.
And, you know, Villa do have a double game week that may come before game week 29. It may come afterwards. It's still TBD, as do Everton, actually. Although, you know, I'm not thinking Decore right now, Brandon. I'm sorry to okay. tell you.
I mean, Rafinha might be the obvious one because a lot of us already picked up Rafinha for Leeds' double the other week.
Right. Only 9% owned, though. It's like, it feels like he's more owned than that.
He is on fire. And even though Leeds did not manage to score against Villa, he's in such great form. Probably one of the most in-form attacking mids in the league right now.
Yeah. It won't surprise you here that he's 11th out of 275 midfielders in the ICT index.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so take that and just, you know, ruminate on it for a while. All right. Final question. FPL Merch says, do we have rose tinted glasses when it comes to Sal? Is that a reference to Elton John, by the way? I mean, I know the expression rose tinted glasses, but is that where does that come from? I don't know.
I'd have to look it up, Josh.
He is now blanked in 9 games out of 12. Woof. As James Richardson would say, seems to be hugging the touchline and can't even score from 6 yards.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, been, walk me through. You watched, I assume, the entire Liverpool match today.
I did. I struggled through Sheffield United v Liverpool, and as a Mo triple captainer, it was painful because he did not have many opportunities at all. He had a few dribbles in on goal, but no real clear cut opportunities apart from a Robertson cross at the very end of the game, which in Mo's defense, the cross came to his right foot, which is not his preferred, and it was coming in pretty hot. Mm-hmm. Now
it's Robbo's fault then.
I mean, it was just wrong place, wrong time. Maybe yeah, Mo should have anticipated the run a little earlier. But
maybe your Robbo could have telegraphed it better.
I mean, listen, I'm not going to have the scorn of all of Scotland knocking sure. at my door. I don't need that right now. I'm willing to bet on Egypt more than Scotland at the moment. I do think we'd have rose tinted glasses for sure. Yeah. The thing that I always land on, I think both of us always land on with Salah, is you're paying for the pedigree. You're paying. This argument gets harder to make every mm-hmm. week, but
it's like buying a poodle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got the paperwork. There's no way I can make a case without saying could, might, is due, probably. Yeah.
It's a tough spot. It's, you know, the problem is if you were to drop him, you'd have to find, okay, yeah. I mean, on a wild card, maybe it's viable. Right. But otherwise, you're like, where am I spending the money? Like, who is the like obvious replacement here? And, you know, you can look at Man City players, but I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard. Like, you sort of like you want two defenders and Gundogan, really. That feels like the smartest way to use that money. Right. I mean, so.
Yeah. Well, I have an idea, because if we're looking at game week 29, Liverpool doesn't play. In game week 29, they blank. Yeah. A lot of us will wild card after that. So Salah is in this position where most of us have no value build up in him. Like right. I bought him at 12.5. He's only gone up to 12.6. So he is somebody that you could sell and buy back on a wild card, and it wouldn't blow up your strategy at all. Yeah. So what does that mean? I'm with you. Like in my team, I've had an extra million in the bank that I cannot for the life of me spend for like the last 6 weeks.
Yep.
But Harry Kane, for those of us who don't have Harry Kane, and this is a way for you to get both Son and Harry Kane going into game week 29 when Spurs face Villa, is you drop Salah to free up the cash for either one of those players. Heck, maybe it's Gareth Bale that you're bringing in. And then you can rework your team to get Salah back if you want on the wild card. So I do think that we're at a point where we're all seriously considering getting rid of Salah when Liverpool blank, not benching him or anything like that. And that's legitimate, because yes, we need to admit the man is definitely out of form.
Yeah. And again, you know, it's a reflection more on the team than on him, but still, and you know, they play Fulham at home in 27. I don't think you drop him for that one. Wolves away in 28. I mean, that's maybe when you could start to think about it. I mean, I don't see Wolves away as although they played Wolves well at home, but I don't know. I just Wolves away does not feel like a fixture where Mo Salah is going to go off, right? So that could be when you start, like, if you're really kicking off your game week 29 plan in earnest, maybe then is when you consider, you know, I don't know.
I think Salah's fine until you have to make your move for 29, and then you dump him. That's my feeling.
Yeah, kind of with you there. So that's the pod, Brandon.
We did it.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Once again, if you want to support the pod, you can go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. You can say thanks. We'll do an extra podcast this week after. It might be early Friday morning because the Black Horse is open, Brandon, and I'm going there. Are you going there too? Or am I going to see you there?
It's unclear. I mean, dining indoors is tricky business these days.
Oh yeah. I was thinking, do they have outdoor stuff? I actually was assuming they would have some kind of outdoor situation.
Oh, cool. If it's outdoors. Yeah. Then I'm definitely there, because Black Horse, we got a message
conversation we could have had offline.
Yeah, no, but it is an opportunity for us to name drop the best bartender, best soccer adjacent bartender in Brooklyn, Jazz Binning, who is one of our producers and such a lovely guy, even though he's a Manchester United fan. And he broke the news. Black Horse is open for business once again. So if you're in the New York area, go to South Slope, go to the Black Horse, and do right by the wonderful staff there.
Absolutely. A quick thank you to our producer patrons. Thank you to Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T. DeBig Gaffer, Babas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, the man himself, Dave Wegner-Lodahl, Nick Wright. Now, I haven't heard from Nick Wright in ages, by the way. I hope he's doing okay.
Are you okay, Nick?
Yeah. What's going on with you, buddy? Are you just having a rough season or what? Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg, Skoyang, Paul Herzig, Kaya Karstina. I haven't heard from Paul Herzig in a while either, Brandon.
What's up, Paul?
Yeah, we need some of these producers. Reach out and say hello. Make sure you're doing to get a proof of life. Kaya Karstina Lang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, FPL Merch had a question on this week's pod. Carrie Swanson was talking strategy with her at 1:30 a.m. on Friday night.
You guys are crazy.
Kieran Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stu, Mikey Yuong, Bruce Kerr, Nicholas Vernadakis, Sam Schauer, Will Husby, Rich Evans, Bobby Stiles, Future Media Group FPL, and our newest Patreon supporter, Ben Sweeney.
Welcome, Ben. And don't forget, rate, review, and subscribe to Always Cheating so you never miss an episode. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever fine podcasts are found. We're also wherever social media is found. And email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. All this information and more is there for you on our website, alwayscheating.com. Josh, good luck in the rest of game week 26.
Yeah,
big goals for Harry Kane and Mo Salah in our future. I know it to be true.
I know. It's wild. I feel like everyone's very tightly bunched points-wise, and I think the next few days are really going to blow everything up. So it should be interesting.
Definitely.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Poku forever.
Bye.